This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Teach your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Hey, y'all. Who dat? And what is up? I'm Jeff Nowak. This is Inside Black and Gold. The draft is over. It's over. It's finally over. We went from the number 9th pick to the number 253 pick, 9 total draft picks. That is quite a bit. It was a long weekend, but Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and myself got together on Sunday morning, as we do after every NFL draft, and spent 3 hours breaking down the 2025 class. We went through every pick, some more than others. Obviously, we're going to talk about the quarterback, Tyler Shuck. We're going to talk about Kelvin Banks. We're going to talk about the 7 other guys that were brought in. First segment, we're going to lay all the picks out. I have some Shuck takes I got to get out into the universe, so bear with me. Second segment, we're going to talk a lot about Kelvin Banks. We're going to hear from Kellen Moore why the Saints were drawn to Kelvin, the Texas offensive tackle, and a little bit more in that segment. Third segment, we're going to break down the UDFA class. When we went through it, the list had not been finalized. Later in the show, the list had been finalized. So we may talk about it in the abstract a little bit, but that list has been finalized. We'll also talk about Jonas Sanker at the back end of that segment because I'm really intrigued by Jonas Sanker. Final segment, we're going to talk about other draft classes. What were some of our favorite draft classes? Who won the draft? Who other than Mel Kiper, who had the biggest crash out? Stuff like that. Appreciate y'all for listening. Again, I'm Jeff Nowak. We're going to hit everything in this episode. We're going to come back later in the week with a more traditional episode, obviously breaking down the class, breaking down some tape, breaking down what we've seen watching these players. We'll have Archie Manning on WWL on Monday, so I'm really interested in what he has to say about Tyler Shuck, guy who went to the Manning Passing Academy twice. But without further ado, let's get into the episode. Enjoy.
Gorgeous Sunday out there. Hope you are gearing up for also Jazz Fest, which I cannot wait for next weekend, while I'll be taking part in. This weekend, though, gentlemen, it was all about the NFL draft. The Saints, I think to pretty much everyone's surprise, held on to all 9 selections.
We're talking about Draft Fest.
Right, exactly. Not Jazz Fest, the Draft Fest.
Was that better or worse than yesterday?
Draft Fest. Yeah, I was thinking about that overnight, and I was like, I can pull this off. I can get this done. It didn't work yesterday.
Improved.
I didn't get the inflection right. We're talking about Draft Fest. Anyway, I'm sorry. What was your question, Steve?
9 picks in the draft, and they kept them all.
9 picks, yeah. I think it kind of signals, you know, I don't think it signals a complete shift in philosophy in terms of how you address the players, how you assess, okay, who do we want to bring in? What are our goals? What are our ideals for these players and what you're looking for? But I do think it's pretty telling of, we have holes on our roster and we got to fill them. Now, what Mickey said and what you heard in the Sports Flash is they had trades that they were looking at. It just didn't develop. There just wasn't anything there.
Worth it for them, right.
And, you know, I think it's a smart move. When you're in the situation the Saints are, when you are coming off of a 4th consecutive missed playoff season, you won 5 games last year, you are not a player or two away. You need to restock the deck. And, you know, we'll go through the UDFAs that have been reported. We haven't got an official word yet.
Even busier after the draft, too.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Well, it's not a big class. And part of the reason is you drafted 7 players last year. You draft 9 players this year. There's only so much space for a UDFA, you know. And because you draft a player, you know, you take Fadil Diggs. And we should go through the list of the picks at some point pretty soon here. But you draft Fadil Diggs at 254. I mean, he was probably your top priority in free agency or in undrafted free agency, right? So it's like, that's kind of where you are. The thing is, when you make this many day three picks, you know, I'm not Mike Dettelier. I'm not going to tell you
I watched
Fadil Diggs at Syracuse. I'm like, I know exactly who he is. It takes me a little while. So
in week three against so-and-so, you know.
Try not to have a visceral reaction right away. And because it's easy to sit there and be like, oh, I like this guy. I watched this guy, but they took that guy. Why? You know, and you kind of have to go into it with an open mind and understanding, like, they've been scouting these guys for a while.
Yeah.
They kind of probably know what they're talking about. So, you know, I'm interested to kind of get a closer look at a guy like Fadil Diggs, who started at Texas A&M, went to Syracuse, Malik Yamatavau, who I talked to at the Senior Bowl. There's a lot to like, I think, about this class.
What I think, too, for me, guys, is like, you have a whole new regime coming in. You want as many of your guys as possible, too. Right. So that made sense to 100%. Me.
Correct. And Jeff, you spoke with Yamatavau. I wanted to get your thoughts on him, you know, at the Senior Bowl. Mike kind of talked about him, that he's a big receiver more than like a blocking tight end. But in the 7th round, it's worth kind of a dart throw. It feels like you have a couple of those, though, with like Dallin Holker. So that's going to be some interesting camp battles to watch.
Yeah,
what you guys start with the 7th rounders first. We're going backwards.
Yeah, well, before we get into that, we're going to get into all of the picks. I don't want, you know, and so let's go through the list of picks first.
Sure.
Just to kind of get so Steve, do you want to kind of go through it?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. Okay, so you want me to do it? I can do it off the top of my head. Okay, number 9
wow,
overall, Kelvin Banks, offensive tackle out of Texas, right? You know, I think a lot of people were looking for a more flashy name, didn't get it either way.
But should be expected if you're a Saints fan. You know this team drafts trenches early on.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 17 times, shame on me, right? Number 40, quarterback Tyler Shuck out of Louisville. A lot of people want to say this was a reach. I disagree with that. I think this is the range he was always going to go in. He was my mock draft pick. I had the Saints trading up to 32 to take him. They stood pat. They got him. That's the range he was going to go in. Right? Don't get fooled by your mock draft simulator. Like, the teams had higher grades on this guy than PFF maybe did. Anyway, going forward, number 71, Vernon Broughton, defensive tackle out of Texas. A guy that, again, people say is a reach. Saints had really good intel on him. Bo Davis was his coach in college, so you brought him in. Next pick, second pick of the 3rd round, you had Jonas. Not Jonas.
Oh, no, sorry.
Jonas Sanker, not Sankey, Sanker, safety out of Virginia, big time tackler, super athlete, came up playing 8-man football. We need to talk to Scott Shanley about his time in 8-man football at some point. He calls it arena football without the arena. Kind of just a fascinating story, but, you know, an interesting piece. So that's the end of the day 2 picks. Fast forward to day 3. It's funny because we got a text on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking text line going into the draft where they were like, I like all these Texas picks. I would take them way sooner than anyone from Oklahoma. And it's almost like the Saints were listening and said, bet, because first pick in the 4th round, number 112 overall, Danny Stutzman. You know, he might sound like a car insurance salesman, but he does make tackles. Man, 100 tackles each of the last 3 years, led the Big 12 in tackles in his sophomore season. So, hey, I like that pick. I like volume tacklers, and that's what you got with Jonas Sanker and Danny Stutzman. Fast forward, we're heading back to Kentucky, baby, the Fighting Jeff Duncans. The Saints at 131 overall take Quincy Riley, cornerback out of Louisville. Obviously a teammate of Tyler Shuck in college. You got 2 players out of Texas, 2 players out of Louisville. Whole heck ton of Senior Bowl guys. Then no picks in the 5th round. Fast forward all the way to 184. And this is where I thought, okay, maybe the Saints might try to package these picks, these late picks, and move up. Nope. They wait all the way to 184. And I would say steal running back Devin Neal out of Kansas at 184 overall, a guy who's had 16 touchdowns each of the last 2 seasons, is the career rushing leader at Kansas, super productive. We talked to him after the draft. He was elated to finally get out of Lawrence, Kansas. He grew up there. He stayed home, and he was like, get me out of here. So he's headed to New Orleans. I'm really intrigued by that pick. Then 2 picks in the 7th round. You waited a long time, 184 to 248, and you end up with, again, a guy I talked to at the Senior Bowl, 6'6", 250, major need. We talked at pick 200. And I was like, Maliki Matavau at a tight end at a UCLA. That's my pick. And that's who they took at 248, one of my better draft calls. Anyway, so we'll talk more about him. And then 6 picks later, 3 picks before the end of the draft, 254, you take the edge rusher Fadil Diggs out of Syracuse, started his career at Texas A&M, transferred, and you had 9 picks, 9 different positions, 9 different needs. Check, 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 check. Put him on the board. Move on. That's your 2025 draft class. I haven't even turned my computer on.
Kyle Klasser, Jeff, wow. Just rattled that off. He's been doing a little studying.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were locked in.
I guess it helps
weekend,
when you're
guys.
Writing it all up, too. Yeah, you just right. Kind of gets ingrained in there.
So, where do y'all want to start? You know, I threw out the Maliki Matavau because you were at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, let's start it. You know, why don't we talk about Matavau? Because that's the only pick that we haven't really taken a lot of time on.
Him and Diggs. I mean, it's at the very back end of the draft. And like,
everybody was ready to go.
Well, quite literally, like the final 10 picks, you made 2 selections.
Yeah,
it was funny because we didn't even get Diggs on the radio. We'll get him soon. But it was like, guys, I think we're done. I think we're ready. But you did get Matavau. And he's a really intelligent guy. He was actually teammates at the Senior Bowl with Tyler Shuck. So there's some connection there. Like they know each other. He had a lot of positive things to say. Everyone who's played with Tyler Shuck, everyone who knows Tyler Shuck has a lot of positive things to say about him. But, you know, the reason I kind of honed in on him was, one, because when I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, I asked him what he wanted to do the most that week. And he's like, I want to work on run blocking. I want to put my hand in the dirt and block some nasty edge players. And that's what the Saints needed. They didn't need another, you know, finesse, route running, move tight end. You got that. Juwan Johnson's that, right? Dallin Hulker can be that. You got that. I needed kind of a big-bodied, hard-nosed blocking tight end. And while it might not be what he did in college because college offenses don't necessarily prioritize the power run game, physically and mentally, and he's willing to do that and capable of doing that. And in the 7th round, I'm not looking for a plug-and-play day one starter. I'm looking for a guy with traits, and he's got the traits.
Yeah, it's always, as we mentioned, kind of the priority undrafted free agents. It's the guys that you just want to make sure you lock down before it gets to that process. But, yeah, I mean, how did he look as a blocker at the Senior Bowl, Jeff, in Mobile?
You know, it's tough because we're looking at practice, and we're not seeing full contact. So it's tough to say, like, blocking is one of those things that's like, it's all about effort.
Yeah.
And until you see it in action, it's tough. But, I mean, like, you see him out there, and he looks the part. Right now, where I have some concerns is he's a little stiff, right, getting downfield. He's got good straight line speed, but he doesn't get in and out of breaks that very well. Like, I don't think he's going to be. He reminds me of Davis Allen out of Clemson, you know, in that similar vein. I don't expect him to be a very big impact in the passing game. Maybe over time he could develop. But no, I mean, it's like blocking is so much about want to, right? It's like being, how are you a good defender in basketball? It's not about skill set a lot of the time. It's about, are you willing to do it? Do you care? Are you willing to look bad? Especially at the tight end position, because you're going up against edge rushers that, it's like Cam Jordan loves nothing more than when they ISO a tight end on him and he can make him look stupid. Like, that's what he loves to do. That's what edge rushers love to do. So in order to be a capable blocking tight end, you got to be willing to go out there and get made look stupid, but survive. Right, you don't have to win every block. You have to give the quarterback time. And I think, you know, the willingness to do that. And, like, I didn't lead him into that answer at all. I was expecting to be like, oh, I'm looking forward to showing what I could do as a pass catcher, whatever. And he was just like, nah, I want to block people. And I just appreciated that. And I'm sure, like, if when he had conversation with the Saints, you got to a lot of that, too.
I'm going to say I'm sure that's something that head coach Kellen Moore saw as well and knows pretty well coming from an Eagle squad that was so dominant up front.
Right. I mean, that's what you're talking about. You're going to play a lot of 12 personnel. You need the pieces to do it. And this draft, more than anything else, it was, okay, we're adding. Like you said, we're adding pieces. Like, we want this, we want this, we want this. We got a lot of wants. Let's go find them. And that's one of them.
Looking at things, was there anybody that you guys wanted in this draft that kind of fell to the side and we weren't able to get to? I was upset, you know, not upset, but it was definitely disappointing the fact that Cam Scataboo ends up going to the New York Giants.
No, that's a good one. And like Dylan Sampson as well. Those were the running backs that we talked about, like leading into day 3, that they needed to address the running back position. And they eventually did with Devin Neal.
Right.
Which, by the way,
I'm not hating that pick either, right?
Production. Like, when you talk about potential versus production, Devin Neal had all of the production in the world at Kansas. He was fantastic there for multiple years. And you get him in the 6th round. And I think that's kind of a testament to this running back class that someone like Devin Neal that put up those types of numbers in college was just sitting there in round 6. Like, the run on running backs still happened on day 3. A bunch of them went. but you were still able to get a good value pick at pick 184.
Well, that was like when we talked to Joel Thomas prior to the draft, one of the things he said was like this draft class, like 2017 is like the premier draft class. And when you're talking about what's the best running back class you can remember, it was 2017 when like a guy like Chris Carson was going in the seventh round, right? A guy who had not a long career, but a really productive career for the Seahawks. Like that's a seventh round pick in that draft. And he said like this class rivaled that class.
Oh, yeah.
You're getting a guy like Devin Neal in the sixth round. Like, you might not, okay, Quinshon Judkins goes off the board early. Trevion Henderson goes off the board early. Obviously, Aston Jeanty. But, like, these guys you're seeing in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, these are good running backs.
And I think the NFL knew that. And that's why, you know, outside of Amarian Hampton and Aston Jeanty that went on day one, there was just four running backs that went on the day two. And then you get to day three,
yeah,
and you have all these guys fly off the board starting in the fourth round. And the Saints were still able to get a good one in round six.
That's something that when you listen to all the draft analysts coming into, you know, the event, I just remember NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah on one of his phone calls saying this is definitely one of those years that he'd much rather have a stockpile of those second and third rounders because of the all-around depth in this draft that there was at certain positions.
Yeah, and
especially the D-line and, right, like you said, running backs.
Yeah, defensive interior specifically, but also a really good edge rusher class. And some edge rushers that kind of fell into day two, to your point, that, like, for instance, and I know this is more of a character thing, but, like, Mike Green going, what was it, 59 to the Ravens?
Yeah, that makes me sick.
And like, you're just thinking, of course, like, the Ravens, after having Malachi Starks fall to them at pick 27 in the first round, where he's going to be a stud pro. In the second round, they just get a first-round prospect fall to him close to pick 60.
Right. How do good teams stay good?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because it's like, you know, it's really when you say, okay, who didn't they take that I wanted them to take? You know, it's always like, who was on the board when you picked?
Yeah.
And really, outside of the second round, I kind of feel like, you know, it's all about, okay, how do you feel about this player? Like Vernon Broughton was probably a little bit of a reach, but it's a need, right? And you're not going to find a stud defensive tackle in day three of the draft. You're just not. Like, you'll find some guys with some traits you like, but you're not finding a plug and play starter. So if they feel like they have a guy who can contribute right away, that makes sense. But no, when Tyler Shuck went off the board, even though he was my mock draft pick in my most recent mock, like, I was on him the entire time. Like, I never stopped saying his name. I said Tyler Shuck to you too many times, objectively too many times. But even then, it was like, oh, man, Will Johnson's on the board. Mason Taylor's on the board. Trey Amos is on the board. Like, there's a lot of names at that number 40 pick. So I understand why people got kind of annoyed. But if you think he's the guy, and I think they do think he's the guy. I think Kellen Moore thinks he's the guy.
Right, they didn't want to risk losing him to another team.
You go get him, and that's what they did. So, you know, I you can quibble with the value on a lot of these picks, but I'm okay with it.
Seeing from 0698, guys, love hearing football on Sunday morning. Which three players are you guys most excited about? And who do you think actually plays or starts game one? And I think one of those guys for me that I think is going to be that day one starter is going to be your first round pick in Kelvin Banks Jr. at number 9 overall.
He better be.
Are
we going to have that conversation now about where he's going to play? I think it's a really interesting question.
Well, do we have the bite from Kellen? Hold on, I have the bite.
Well, let's answer the guy's question as well. Three most exciting prospects. I like Vernon Broughton a lot. Him and Alfred Collins, as Mike D mentioned, were a legit stone wall on the interior of the Texas defensive line. So I'm going with both the Texas picks here.
Yeah.
But you address the trenches with two really stout prospects, and then, you know, the third one kind of up in the air. I would probably say Devin Neal just because of the amount of production that he had at Kansas.
I'm with you on
Neal for
sure, too.
What is the question? Who's going to start?
No, who were your three favorite picks, basically?
Favorite picks. You know, I feel like I'm in the minority, and it's like, I like the quarterback.
Sure.
I do like the quarterback. Like,
I'm excited about it, too, just because I know it's Kelvin's guy. I mean, Kellen's guy.
I've been doing that all day. Kelvin and Kellen. Like, they couldn't have made that
connection
more difficult. Anyway, I think people... Everyone gets excited about Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward and whatever, and they like people aren't talking about
Tyler Shuck. Folks are excited about Shedeur.
Yeah, well, that's one of the conversation. We talked about that yesterday. We should talk about it again. Mel Kiper just had a meltdown.
And I saw you on Twitter too. Our boy Scott Shanley has been going off on folks.
Scott Shanley laying
the wood,
catching bodies lately, and I'm all about it. He's coming from the top rope on
people.
Like
you mentioned to me in a text, it started like he slammed Derek Carr and has been on
and
a tear.
And he was like, "I like this. I'm gonna go. I'm good at anyway." But no, I mean. like, I think people didn't talk about Tyler Shuck enough, so everyone's like, oh, they just took this guy that no one cares about. But, like,
I think the biggest knock is he's an older prospect, and people have a problem with that.
Yeah, and, you know, the funniest thing is I had this, like, Falcons tool coming at me, like, oh, man, he's so old. And I was like,
what are you talking about?
Michael Penix is going to be 25 in, like, 2 weeks. Like, seriously, these guys are both going to be 25 in 2 weeks. He turns 25 on May 8th, and you're telling me now, you're like, oh, he's Brandon Whedon 2.0. Brandon Whedon was 29. That's different.
Right. What was 25 old? Man,
like,
oh, man.
God. Like, you're telling me that, oh, well, because Michael Penix came into the league at 24 and this guy's coming to the league at 25, it's a completely different situation. Michael Penix doesn't have any ACLs. anyway, I was just so annoyed. I was like,
You've had a lot of coffee this morning.
Well, no, it's just like, guys, like, at least be consistent. Like, if you're not going to care about the age of Michael Penix, don't act like the age of Tyler Shuck is a major issue. He played one more year in college, they are the same age. All right. So it's just stupid. It's like, okay, is the agent issue? The team doesn't think so. The player doesn't think so. I mean, I personally don't think so, because if he's going to play, he's going to play. And if he's good, it doesn't matter if he's a little older than a rookie. Jaden Daniels came to the league at 24. Spencer Rattler was 24. We don't talk about how old he was. Everyone's like, argh. I just think it's such an overblown issue that misses the point of, like, is he a good quarterback? Can he throw? Can he make the throws? All I see is that one clip where he kind of, it looked like he...
Over and over.
Yeah, it looked like, I don't know what happened, but he kind of, he was rolling out and it kind of slipped out of his hand and he kind of just chucked it. And then there's the clip at the combine.
That's the one I thought you were talking about.
It looks like the ball slipped out of his hand and he made a weird throw. And they ignore the fact...
This is your quarterback?
They ignore the fact that, like, he had the best workout of any quarterback at the combine. So, no, I mean,
definitely wasn't Shadur.
There's a lot of misinformation about, like, how he... the quality of his quarterback play. But I just think if you're listening to people who understand the quarterback position, they have a lot of positive things to say. I mean, I compare him to Jared Goff. People are like, I can't believe you'd compare him to Jared Goff. That's who you want? I'm like, have you watched Jared Goff? Yes. I want the four-time Pro Bowler who was second in passing last year, was fifth in the MVP voting. You're telling me that would be a bad thing? Anyway, I just think people aren't excited about Tyler Shuck because he's not the sexy name. He's not whatever. Like, oh, they reached for him. Whatever. I think he's going to be a good quarterback, and you're in the business of collecting good quarterbacks. So we'll see. I know that wasn't really the question.
The biggest legitimate knock against Shuck, I think, is just his injury history.
Yeah. We're worried about the injuries with him, but we're not worried about the injuries of Penix. The guy who had two ACL injuries.
That's even more significant. Ligaments. Like,
right.
When you just have broken bones, that was the issue with Shuck, is that freak kind of broken collarbones and then like a broken femur, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
It wasn't
fibula. And he got hip dropped. Right?
That's what it was.
And so it's like, okay, I mean, he doesn't have more breakable bones than anybody else. It's just bad luck.
Right.
But, I mean, it is an injury history, and you have to look at it.
But it's not, you know, multiple torn ACLs or torn Achilles or anything like that.
Yeah, the bone heals, you're back. And one thing Jeff Brohm said, we talked to Jeff Brohm after the pick, and, you know, he was like, yeah, at Texas Tech, they were having him run QB power. He was taking hits. And sure, maybe he's not the most durable guy if you're asking him to play like Taysom Hill, but I don't think the Saints are going to ask him to play like Taysom Hill. So, if their goal was to bring him in and run QB power, like, I don't think he's Jalen Hurts, right? But I don't think you're going to ask him to play that way. So I just think you look at a guy who has all the traits you want. He's 6'5". He's got a cannon arm. One of the things I really do appreciate, and I tweeted about this, is watch him navigate pressure. And now, dealing with pressure is going to be an issue for him. But watch how he is able to slide away from pressure and always stay square down the field. Like, you see guys scramble. And, like, think about when you watch a guy scramble, how long is it going to take him to set his shoulders, get the ball to a throwing position, and actually get it downfield? What he's able to do is just slide, even against his arm, like away from his arm, and always has his shoulders set so that he can get the ball out quick. And that, like, quick release when you are extending is massive. It is the biggest difference between a big play or a big interception, a big turnover, a late ball over the middle of the field. And watching him adjust to that speed is going to be big. But, like, that's the type of kind of quarterback play, subtle quarterback play, that I think you're getting out of that guy that you might not be getting out of a 22-year-old quarterback, out of a 21-year-old quarterback, out of a guy that didn't spend 7 years in college. So, I don't know. All that is to say, like, I like the quarterback. I do. And people are going to be like, oh, you're just being whatever, a shill for the team. And I'm like, I've been telling you I want this guy for 3 weeks. So I'm not going to pretend I'm mad about it. Anyway, I don't know why I'm going off on a rant, but I am.
Jeff, you feeling it this morning?
No one's even talking to me and telling me I'm wrong. I'm just mad. I'm mad at the sky.
Twitter sphere, right?
Yeah. Twitter sphere is.
We're talking about Tyler Shuck, though, that 40th overall pick for the Black and Gold. And during the Zoom call with the media, he was asked, how much interaction did he have with the Saints?
Coach Tolzien came to my pro day, and we did a really extensive board work, went to go get lunch and dinner. We spent about the whole day together before pro day, and we connected really well. He watched pro day, obviously, so he got to see me work out. And then, shortly after then, I came in for a 30 visit and got to meet everybody, and it just had a great experience, man. The facilities there, the coaching, I met all day with them, and they had great feedback, great support. And but yeah, I really hadn't heard from them. Hadn't heard from him since then, and I was talking to my boy Ziad right after, and it was just like, man, I hope it works out. And as I was leaving at the airport, and luckily it worked out.
That was Tyler Shuck talking to the media about his interaction with the Saints, and we kind of were, like I was mentioning, the biggest knock against him has been injuries. Hasn't been hamstring, hasn't been shoulder or any kind of soft tissue stuff.
Yeah.
It's been broken bones
and
fractured
bones. When he got into the Louisville offense where he wasn't asked to scramble and run around as much, he stayed healthy. So, and that's what Jeff said. We was like, what do you think the difference was and why he was able to stay healthy last year? It's because we didn't ask him to dive into, charging linebackers on every third play, right? And, I don't know. I like the dog, right? I'm a dog guy.
Right.
He's got a dog. That's not a good reason to like a guy, but I don't know. I like the guy. And dog
we had puking
Murphy.
Babies and dogs headlining
the
Saints draft.
The first two picks, you got these viral moments. You got the puking baby, and then you got the dog who just had to be part of the celebration. They bought 32 bandanas for the dog.
Nice.
So they had every one just in case. And Tyler said that Murphy was the dog who's named after the character in Interstellar, which he said Murphy was the main character in Interstellar, which I think is kind of telling of him as a personality. Because if it's like, that's a Matthew McConaughey movie. No. It's a Jessica Chastain movie. I'm sorry. Anyway, like three people listening will appreciate that reference. But I just hope people can go into this offseason and root for the guy, because I think that he's a lot to like. And people are reacting to very little information because he wasn't talked about a lot. And I think it's a mistake.
We know about how injuries can mentally affect a guy as well. Shuck talked about dealing with those.
For me, it's only made me stronger. I've had the bone breaks. It hasn't affected me physically, and it's strengthened me mentally. So, I feel so prepared to come into to New Orleans and just go there and continue to learn, continue to grow and compete. And, at this point, I'm ready for this opportunity and excited to get there.
Shulk coming into an offense with a guy that's been a QB. There's plenty of QBs on this staff. Also, it's nice having a coach that just, hoisted the Lombardi trophy in the dome you're going to be calling your home. But Shulk was asked about Kellen Moore and the rest of the Saints staff.
I mean, I think everywhere Coach Moore has been, it's been greatness from the quarterback position. I think he's a guru when it comes to that. And I'm just so excited to kind of continue to work with him. And that, I feel like this is the only team in the NFL where you got the QB coach, the OC, and the head coach, all quarterback guys. So just an incredible opportunity to come in and learn from them.
He mentioned it right there for me. Yeah, I think this is a dream scenario for a young quarterback considering all the QBs you have in the Saints coaching room.
Yeah, and I've calmed down now. I've taken a few
sips. Have another cookie.
Yeah. They're regular cookies. But, no, I mean, I think the other thing I see a lot is, this is Mickey Loomis putting his thumb on the scale. And I don't know. I feel like people misunderstand Mickey Loomis's role. Like, Mickey Loomis defers to the people he has assigned to be the experts in the room.
Yeah, Mickey's not in there banging the table. Take this guy.
Yeah, it's like, I know all you guys want this guy, but I like that guy. Yeah. We're taking that. That's just not how it goes. And I think he's the figurehead, so he gets all the blame. But, like, when you're talking about this guy, if you think Kellen Moore is not a massive Tyler Shuck fan, you're crazy.
It was his pick.
It's his guy. You are not bringing in Kellen Moore and saying, well, we're going to get you this
quarterback. You got to deal with Derek Carr, and here's this guy you drafted
right,
too.
No. So, like, if you think that they are just like, he's okay, but we're going to take him because we're desperate. It's like, no, Kellen Moore, Scott Tolzien, Doug Nussmeier, all these former NFL quarterbacks, high-level quarterbacks, know what they're talking about when it comes to the quarterback position. They identified their guy, and it's him. So, I'm gonna say in Kellen we trust here because I think he's a smart guy. I think his assessment is valuable here.
I love, too, on the Oakenheart Jewelers talking text line, 0698 deferring to two quarterbacks we know here as well. The Cajun Cannon, he says, and Archie Manning are high on Shuck. That's good enough for me. Who dat?
There you go. And Greg Cosell from NFL Films, a couple months ago in the pre-draft process.
Yeah, like February.
Yeah, literally months ago. We've talked to him before on the show, kind of, I think it was actually before last year's draft. I don't think we had him on before this year's draft. But you saw, his kind of comments on Tyler Shuck where he mentions the mechanics are really clean for like a college prospect. And you kind of expect that from an older college prospect. But at the same time, someone that has, experience, he liked him. He liked the size, 6'5", 220 pounds. for the quarterback position. He said he looks the part, and he was his QB2 of this class. And Greg Cosell watches a lot of tape. He knows what he's talking about.
The other guy who was really high on Tyler Shuck, and they kind of made fun of him about it during the broadcast, Louis Riddick has been banging the Tyler Shuck drum over and over again on every show. And I don't know, like, I like Louis Riddick. There's certain analysts out there that I take a little more seriously than others. Like, I don't take Mel Kiper that seriously. He's kind of just the draft guy.
He made himself a clown with the right,
whereas stuff. But like Louis Riddick, I actually, it's like when he says something, like, I'm like, okay, I buy that. I think Schlereth is another guy. Like, when I ask him a question and he answers it, I'm like, okay. Like, I get insight from that question. And so, like, listen to what Lewis has to say about him, and then kind of make your own assessment.
One last thing about Tyler Shuck, guys. He was asked also to describe his style of play, QB.
I think for me, I'm a high-level mental processor and have those, you know, NFL traits and QB qualities, you know, being a taller guy who can move and be an athletic and can make any type of throw. But I think for me, my biggest thing and where I've had success is being able to win pre-snap and make up for it post-snap if it's not the right look. And for me, I'm going to continue to try and play free and just go out there and continue to grow and continue to get better. And I think that, you know, every year in my career, I feel like I've learned so much and gotten better. So that's my goal right now, is to continue to climb.
Yeah, one thing with Shuck now in the mix and another young quarter, well, two young quarterbacks with Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener, it's going to be a fun competition to start watching unwind, you know, start to get together, I should say, not unwind, but get, you know, going when we get into organized team activities. I mean, we're not going to see much for rookie minicamp out of anybody, but yeah, at least OTAs.
I expect you'll see Tyler.
But I feel like we don't usually get access to the practices, just like the locker room.
We'll get one practice. We should get the locker room. But you're running kind of milquetoast. I don't even know if you're going to run any team sets.
Yeah, you're not going to see one practice with just not the rest of the team and be like, oh, my God, Pro Bowler Tyler Shuck.
But it will be the first time we get to see him throw right up close and get a good look at, like, what he actually looks like, the size. Like, he's 6'5". Like he is the quarterback build you want. So we'll see. But, yeah, that's going to come up in a couple weeks. But I agree with you. The competition, I think it's going to be a competition. I don't think they're just going to hand it to Joe. And we're back on Inside Black and Gold, a WWL radio fueled edition. Went through a lot about Tyler Shuck in that last segment. This segment, we're going to be diving in on Kelvin Banks, get some insight on the player, the number 9 overall pick out of Texas. We're going to hear from head coach Kellen Moore why the Saints landed on the offensive tackle, what was the philosophy there, and a lot more. Here you go.
Welcome back into our Draft Fest Sunday recap show. The Saints making 9 picks in the 2025 NFL Draft. 9 selections. Number 1 we'll get into now was an offensive lineman, gentlemen. And this is definitely a need for the team with offensive tackle Kelvin Banks Jr. I know there was some disappointment that you couldn't get your hands on maybe a Will Campbell, but I didn't think that was ever really legitimately a possibility, considering all the talk leading into this draft was that Vrabel and the Patriots were in love with him.
I want to say it was Brett Coleman. I forget who on social media had posted it, but it's just like Mike Vrabel probably spent 5 minutes in a room with Will Campbell.
I'm
like,
sold.
This is my pick.
Yeah,
he is such a Vrabel guy. And I mean, his emotions after he got drafted and just hearing him talk, because I ended up doing the locals to the pros, and obviously Monroe, Louisiana native, former Neville Tiger, gets drafted 4th overall by the Patriots. And Vrabel, in this like kind of post day one presser, said this was quote unquote a very, very easy pick for us. They view him as a left tackle for all the analytics folks that think he can't play tackle. And we'll see how he does. And if he fails at tackle, he's going to be a legitimate guard at the NFL level. I think he'll be a good tackle though. So it's a very safe pick. It was an easy pick via Mike Vrabel, and we're hoping for the best for Will Campbell.
Looking at the Saints pick, though, of Kelvin Banks Jr., it's really hard, I guess, to kind of break down offensive linemen as Joe Schmoes that we are, not really coaches or scouts.
Right.
Correct. You are correct.
You're looking at the film, and it's like, all right, you think this guy's doing a good job.
It's probably Saints bias in terms of, like, I see him play and I'm like, okay, Teron Armstead, like, he looks kind of like Teron Armstead the way he moves around. I mean, personality-wise, they're not that dissimilar. I just think that's and whether you want to compare their play styles, like Teron was always a guy that was very unique in how he executed his sets, and one of the reasons I think he fell in the draft is because he wasn't your prototypical kind of style left tackle. He kind of did things his own way. Kelvin, I think, is more traditional.
Yes.
But I just think that's what you're getting is a very high character, high caliber guy, not a ton of questions. Mickey Loomis came out and was like, yeah, we love Kelvin Banks. Like, he has very few holes in his game. He said he had people texting him after they made the pick and was like, this is a great pick. And like, this is like the guy that you want to add to your roster. You know, it would have been fun for, you know, I'm curious if they would have taken Tet McMillan if he had gotten one pick further. He went to the Panthers at number 8. You know, I'm sure they had some, you know, skill players that they were really high on in that spot. But I think when you get to a point where there's not, you know, the Aston Gentry's off the board, like Tet McMillan's off the board, some of these guys that feel like they could be game changers for you on offense are off the board.
Tyler Warren was
you
there.
You go back to...
Yeah, he was.
But he didn't even...
No, I know it wasn't the first tight end even
Colston
taken.
Yeah, Loveland went ahead of him.
I was surprised by that.
That was
that
something
one.
That they had said in the pre-draft process, though, is that those two were really, really close, and some right. teams had them even flip-flop, but it was like 1A, 1B more than anything.
But the idea that they, you know, it's like, oh, they didn't take Tyler Warren. He didn't go for four more picks, so right. like... I just think when you're talking about an offensive line prospect and you have a very, you know, it's like Fuaga last year, like they didn't even have a ton of meetings with Fuaga. They didn't have questions. They felt very good about him as a player. And I feel like they felt the same way about Kelvin. So however you set this up, I would be surprised if you don't try to put Fuaga back at his more natural position at right tackle. But no, I mean, I think that's where you are is you want to add high floor players. And that's what you got. Like, I don't think that there are many questions about what Kelvin can do at the NFL level.
No, I agree. I think high floor is a great way to describe him. Now, the question becomes, you know, where do you envision him right off the bat? Because he's starting day one. That's not a question. Left guard was the biggest hole on this offensive line from the get-go. I know that there are questions about Trevor Penning playing at right tackle. Taliese Fuaga was fantastic at left tackle in his rookie year, so... Do you take him and move him back over to right tackle where he played all in college? I think it would work out.
I think you probably do.
But at the same time, you're like moving a proven NFL left tackle, in my opinion. So you're either going to have Kelvin slot in at left guard right off the bat or play his natural position at left tackle and then move Tally back over to right tackle. I think it's an interesting conversation to have. I'm looking forward to seeing what the coaching staff does. In my opinion, I think that's probably what you do.
Here's the thing. If you're going to do it, I think you want to do it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you get half through the season, you're like, this isn't working out. Like, you don't want to do it then. If I'm changing his position, I want to do it while we're changing offenses and there's so many moving parts to begin with. That's where I land. But yeah, I think either way, you have your tackles of the future.
Agreed. You have your bookends. And so with Kelvin, you know, 3-year starter at left tackle at Texas, very decorated, all SEC, unanimous, all American. It's just. High floor is one way of putting it. Safe is if you want one word for the 9th overall selection.
Yeah.
Safe for Kelvin Banks Jr.
I can't remember who it was, and Mickey kind of referenced this last week. It's like you're not trying to hit home runs. You'd love to hit home runs with every pick, but like I want to hit doubles, and worst case I want to hit singles.
Yeah, that's the Ravens.
I'll just take getting on base, baby.
Like I'm not striking out here, and yeah, you can play a little scared there. You know, you're not going to hit a lot of home runs if you're not trying to hit home runs. But they're not in a position to swing for the fences. They're in a position to add quality players and
line drive down the middle here.
Right. I'm going the. You know, it's like I could try to pull a home run over the left field wall, or I could go with the pitch and you know slap a double into right field, and I'm still moving things.
But real quick, want to get into some Kelvin Banks audio, his impressions from meeting with the Saints pre-draft.
At the combine, man, it was definitely a good meeting for me. Went in, drew up some play schemes, but also just getting to see what type of organization they were and them getting to see what type of person I am. So we had a great meeting there. And then at Pro Day, Coach Nugent, he kind of ran a drill there too. And we kind of got to interact a little bit, like the football aspect of it. So it was definitely good communication there.
Talked about kind of a little bit about where we think Banks could end up lining up for this squad. He was asked if he was talked to by the Saints staff on where he will be on the O-line.
I'm going to play whatever, man. As long as I'm the best, if I'm the best 5 on the field and they give me the opportunity to go out there and start and earn that right, then I'm going to play wherever they put me at.
I think that's the big key. Best 5 on the field, that should be the Saints' philosophy and believe it will be going forward. You're not just trying to fit somebody in there. Banks describes also his skill set, what he brings to this O-line.
I'll say I'm a smart player, smart, physical, smartest fast thinking, but fast thinking, quick feet, things of that nature. So I'll say those are like some tangibles of where my game excels.
And Kellen Moore's first ever pick as the head coach of the Saints. Banks was asked his interactions with his new head coach.
At the combine is when I really talked to him the most, and he's a great guy, man. He kind of lets his players be who they are. He wants to understand you. He wants to understand where you come from and things like that. So it was definitely a good meeting at the combine with him, and he's a great guy.
Kelvin Banks Jr., Texas offensive tackle, now a member of the Black and Gold, and seeing the draft grades out there for the Saints' first-round pick, nothing below a C. I feel like it's been pretty average. Maybe a B plus to A out there as well. I've seen for Kelvin Banks Jr. I love it. We talked about wanting to strengthen the trenches, offense, defense, and that fills one of those spots.
It's a big boy game.
I would have loved to see an edge rusher, but you know, it's like, you know, you talk about Tyler Shuck. People are concerned about Tyler Shuck. You know, the best way to make sure Tyler Shuck has a chance,
get him a wall. Yeah. Want to remind everybody of the Saints' 9 picks in this year's class. You had Kelvin Banks Jr., Tyler Shuck, Vernon Broughton, Jonas Sanker, Danny Stutzman, Quincy Riley, Devin Neal, say it for me, Charlie.
Maliki Matavau.
Thank you. Maliki Matavau. And Fadel Diggs. I look at that name with Maliki, and it's just intimidating.
It's not too bad. Like
I don't want to get it wrong, too, and I start panicking.
I messed it up for the 6 o'clock news report yesterday, but then I just did it again, and I just got it. I'm like, oh, that's how you say it.
The Saints even sent out for us the proper pronunciation, and I'm still like, I just look at it.
You got to remember.
That first name just makes me freeze.
Jonas Sanker.
I know, I said
like
Jonas.
Like Jonas Valanciunas. That's the easiest way to remember.
JV, Matavau
is actually pretty easy once you say it.
Yeah, Matavau.
It's kind of fun, actually.
Remember to go through it, right?
It's not like Giannis, right?
That was like way back when the Saints had taken Haloi Kakaha. I know a lot of folks were intimidated by that, but after doing it so many times. I'm like, it looks a lot worse than just saying it, right?
Yeah, if I can learn how to say Giannis Antetokounmpo, I think I can handle this one.
Exactly.
We just went through those draft picks for the Saints on day 1 through 3 for the Black and Gold. Head coach Kellen Moore addressed the media on the first two nights of the draft. Here's what he had to say on drafting Kelvin Banks Jr.
He's everything you want your organization to represent. The player, the person, three-year starter. She's just turning 21 here next month. You meet him, you quickly are gravitated to him as a person, and you put on the film, and he gets after people. You know, he moves people in the run game. He's a great pass protector. He just does an excellent job.
We talked about the position versatility for Banks on the offensive line, and Moore was asked by the media how he feels about Banks possibly fitting in at that guard spot.
Certainly feel like he's got the flexibility to play anywhere on the offensive line as far as, you know, the tackle spots, the guard spots. And we got other guys who are flexible too. I think, we feel really good about this. Got Trevor, we went and signed Dylan. We got a lot of depth in this group that allows us to have some flexibility there.
I did think it was interesting there when, asked about playing guard. He did bring up the name Trevor Penning there, possibly.
Yeah, Dylan Raidens, who they picked up in the offseason.
You said Raidens right.
Yes. Well, that was the one that was really weird.
No, it was a draft night. Mike Dettillier, Bobby Aber were going back and forth on the last name.
Like yeah. Reduns or whatever? It's spelled like Reduns.
Right, but it's Raidens, right.
Yeah, Raidens. Anyways.
We'll say it a whole bunch of different times, too.
I'm going to stay out of this.
The left guard competition is going to be a really interesting one because, depending on what they decide to do with Kelvin, if they keep him at left tackle and move Tyler back to right tackle, his natural position that he played at Oregon State, like, who's going to be the left guard? Jeff, you had brought it up when we talked with you last week. Are they going to throw Penning at guard, or are they just going to keep him as a backup right tackle?
It's, I think people are underestimating that it's not as simple as just saying, go play guard now.
Yeah, jumping from position to position to position for 3 straight years.
Like, what if he's significantly worse at guard? Well, what if you can't play him at guard and your best five? Again, it's about getting your best five on the field. What if Trevor is a better right tackle than he is a left guard, and Kelvin is a better left guard than he is a right tackle? And I think people are just assuming that's the only thing they can do is move Trevor to guard and move Tally to right tackle and Kelvin to left tackle. And here's the thing, Trevor's on the final year of his contract. So, it might be the best case scenario for this season to do that. And when you hear Kellen talk, the thing he says and the thing I believe him is, what they like about this offensive line is they feel like they have options.
you know, and you went to the last few years and you felt like you were locked into like, oh, man, I don't know, we're going to have to do this, we're going to have to do this. And this year, more than any other year, really, you feel like you can do a lot of things. Now, what I will say is Kellen Moore is coming off a year with the Eagles that they went out and got a first-round pick of Mekhi Becton and said, we don't have a spot for you at tackle, but we can play you at guard. And they threw him at guard, and he played well, and he picked up a pretty decent contract from the Chargers, a two-year, $20 million contract to play guard. So, you know, it's worked for him before. So I wouldn't be surprising if that is a hope. But at the end of the day, no one in that Saints building has ever seen Trevor Penning play guard. He's never got reps at guard, right? Correct. He's never done it in his career. He's only played tackle. He had never played right tackle before last year. So, I don't know. We'll see. But at the
That's
end
like
of the
I was
day...
That's like I saying, oh, Saint, Jeff, you were our Saints sideline reporter. We're going to go have you do the sidelines for the World Cup match or something.
I thought you meant like do play-by-play or something like that.
Right, there you go. Just totally switching things up. Right, you're in the booth for Haas this week.
Yeah, it's a different position. It's a lot different than going from left to right because you're still playing the same position. You're just reversing everything. Your responsibilities are different. The calls are different. What you're trying to do is a lot different. You know, you can be physical. You have to pull. When's the last time you saw Trevor pull across the line? Like, you didn't do that a lot. So, and he did it a little, but it's a big question mark. And so, I don't know. I think it's people are making it out a lot simpler than it's actually going to be.
Yeah, just plug him in there.
Yeah, let's change two positions from people who played last year. Anyway.
Kelvin Banks Jr., the Saints' 9th overall selection in the NFL draft. 6'5", 315. What does Coach Kellen Moore, what was he impressed with Banks when looking at him?
Certainly when you combine the situation, he's a three-year starter. He's really young. He's about ready to turn 21. For him to just hop in there and compete at that high of a level in, you know, arguably some of the toughest games in college football that you're going to play. You know, it just shows the player and the person that he is.
Coach Kellen Moore talked about Moore Banks's resume and why he loves it.
The beauty of him going and playing 3 years at Texas, you go see him play some big-time opponents. And, you know, there's a bunch of weeks where he's playing guys that, you know, were drafted today and they'll be drafted tomorrow. And so when you go watch him play those games, you're seeing him play guys that are going to be playing on Sunday. And so a bunch of games come out. He's one of those guys when you play there, week in and week out, he's battling some of the best. And so it showed up consistently.
That is definitely one of the things I like about Kelvin is the competition he's
battle
playing.
Amen to that, right.
In two different conferences.
It's not like, well, it was at a lesser school, so.
Right, like even if it was like, oh, he's been in the SEC the last 2 years, you're like, yeah, okay, but he played the same offenses a few years in a row. Like he had to go from, you know, the Big Ten to the SEC. Like that's not easy.
Right.
Did y'all see the tweet? I think the Falcons put it out there, or maybe a Falcons account. Jalen Walker going against Kelvin Banks.
Yeah.
And Kelvin holds for up sure. for like a full 5 seconds, yeah. And Quinn Ewers is just a statue.
Like, Jalen got the sack.
He got the sack.
Yeah.
But is it really a one rep?
I mean, Kelvin kind of put him into the dirt and like, okay, Quinn, what are you doing back there? And, you know, maybe that was the rep that got Quinn Ewers all the way to the seventh round.
Yeah, seventh round dart throw for Miami. Yeah. I mean, Quinn Ewers. Talk about a weird...
Apparently, he was Michael Pratt. Apparently, that's how teams viewed him, is the same as Michael Pratt.
He comes in as like this supernova prospect. Like
he was a perfect prospect.
A perfect prospect.
Like a 1,000.
And then he just has a kind of mediocre, middling collegiate career. Yeah. And he declares for the draft anyways, because Texas was just like, yeah, we're going to Arch next year. And like, we don't really want you back.
Yeah.
And so he declares for the draft instead of staying in college and trying to go to another school, and he gets picked in the seventh round.
Yeah, that was the post I saw was like, other than Shedeur Sanders, the biggest story is that Quinn Ewers should have gone into the transfer play.
Really probably should have. But it was just kind of funny, like, you know, the Falcons taking Jalen Walker, they're trying to get some ribs off on Kelvin Banks, and I think Kelvin won the rep. So yeah. It is what it is.
That's the weird thing, right?
The fun thing about watching Kelvin's tape, the level of competition. If you saw Steve Sarkisian's comments right after he got drafted.
Glowing reviews,
the
right.
Freshman year for Kelvin Banks, one of the first major matchups that he had was going against Alabama, Will Anderson, Dallas Turner. Two first-round picks. And that's just an example. Like
he's going to play in the NFL.
Yeah, right. Edge rushers, NFL edge rushers that you see in the SEC. And Mike talked about this during the college football season. Every single week, same thing with like Will Campbell, the left tackle for LSU. They were going against NFL defensive linemen. Every single SEC team had one, at least one, if not multiple. Like look at Mississippi State, Ole Miss, who had like five of them taken. So it's just an example. But Kelvin Banks battle tested.
Yeah, right? I've seen people say like, they did this with Trevor Penning. And like, no, I didn't. This isn't what they did with Trevor Penning. Trevor Penning won, first of all, was a 19th overall pick, which that's a way
people
different
People said the
situation.
Same thing about Penning when they took Fuaga. Like, oh, he's a physical, right. You know, tackle. And like, Fuaga worked out fine. I mean, Penning obviously hasn't really worked out, but like people were all worried about the Fuaga pick because they were like, oh, it's Penning 2.0.
The issue for Penning was the transition to NFL competition.
Correct.
Right? And that's the biggest difference to me is like, I don't wonder how Kelvin's going to hold up against NFL competition because we've seen him do it for 3 years.
And then the poor thing with Penning, he dealt with foot injuries, and that's a nightmare for an offensive lineman.
Yeah, things just didn't go well, and I think pairing him with Doug Marrone was the worst possible developmental situation you could put him into.
Later, Doug.
He just was not there to develop a young player who needed someone to kind of handhold him a little bit, and that slowed his development down. I think, like you saw with John Benton last year, a guy who was a lot more prone to teaching and approached it more as a teacher than I think Doug did, and you saw him develop, you know, and yeah, I think he still has ways to go, but I think the way I feel about Trevor Penning right now is a lot different than the way I felt about him last year, and you know, so he's a guy that's gonna play somewhere, you know, so we'll see. Either way, like, I think the most likely scenario, as we just to kind of put a bin on this, I do think the most likely scenario, you move Talley to right tackle, you put Calvin Banks at left tackle, and you put Penning at left guard, but I think people are underplaying that's not the only way they can do it. It's not the only scenario that works.
I was just going to say that's what Coach Kellen was basically saying. Like, they have options.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think that would be the best case scenario is having Kelvin come in, be your left tackle, and moving Talley back to right tackle, and just knowing that you feel safe with both your bookends.
Back in on Inside Black and Gold, Jeff Nowak here. Gonna kick to another segment in this WWL Radio Fueled edition. Myself, Steve Geller, Charlie Long. We're gonna break down the UDFA class, the 11-person UDFA class, as it has now been confirmed by the team. A lot of intriguing names on there. We'll talk about who we think could make the biggest impact, what are the players we're most interested in watching, and a lot more. We'll also talk about a famous YouTuber. A famous YouTuber that you may have heard of, some car fellow. Anyway, we'll get into it. Who dat? Enjoy.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear what Archie Manning has to say because Tyler Shuck went to the Manning Passing Academy twice. He actually said Archie texts him, regularly. So I'm sure he has some strong feelings about Tyler as a player.
Our encyclopedia of football, Mike DiTilio, was able to just go like scroll through his phone, found the picture at the Manning Passing Academy, was like, boom, here's Archie and Tyler Shuck.
I did like the detail that he said that like they always have the signs that say their name, and underneath in parentheses, they had to spell it like S-H-U-C-K so he could get it. You know, I was talking, one thing before we go to the UDFAs, Tyler was on the call with you guys, and he said that his name means like a little shaggy dog in Scottish. But when I looked it up, you know, I think there's a few different meanings for the term Shuck. And I don't blame him for going with the one he did. But I think that's an Irish
settling. With the spelling of H-O-U-G-H, are you talking about S-H-U-C-K?
No, it's S-H-O-U-G-H. It's like, it just means, it's pronounced Shuck. And there is one like a kind of Icelandic definition of that it's a little shaggy dog. And it's like, yeah, cool. That's cute. I'm a dog guy. It works. But if you Google it, there's also kind of a secondary definition that's Irish or Scottish that is like a ditch filled with water. Like a water-filled ditch. It's like, yeah, okay.
A shuck.
And which is if I asked you what do you think a shuck is?
Like ditch.
A little ditch with water in it. Kind of sounds right. But, you know, I don't blame him for going with the dog. Right, I don't blame him for being like, yeah, it means a little shaggy dog. Oh, yeah, it means a little ditch with water. Yeah, I mean, one sounds better than the other. So I just find it interesting.
Yeah, you know my family.
Yeah, he said it. He told you guys like at one point, he was like, maybe I'll just change it and spell it the way it sounds. Like, yeah, he's like, I'll stick with it. It's endearing.
Looking at, you mentioned the Saints undrafted free agents they've signed. You can check that out. Jeff's got them up at WWL.com, his UDFA free agent tracker. And we're a little bit busy. Right after the draft, these names started pouring out.
Yeah, so it's a smaller class than usual. The Saints have not sent out an official list yet. So a lot of these, you know, some of them are confirmed, some of them are unconfirmed. You know, it's 11 players right now that we know about. Usually it's around 16, 17. They came out a little slower than in the past. And I think part of that is, you know, what are you typically doing when you're done with your draft picks? You're calling UDFAs, like you're getting that list sorted out. Well, the Saints, up until the last 10 picks of the draft, had two picks to make. So I don't think they got as early a start on the UDFA market as, or like, remember the year they drafted Adam Trautman? They traded the whole back half of their board. They spent all of day three working on UDFAs, and then were like, you know what? Tommy Stevens, he wants to go to the Panthers, but we want him. So we're going to actually trade up and go get him. With a, anyway, so all that is to say there are 11 names on this list, but the names we have, so we're just going to run
I have one already just because of his nickname, quote unquote.
Moochie?
Yeah, Moochie.
Yeah, I had a feeling it was going to be Moochie. So we can start with Moochie. So we got Kelvonte Moochie Dixon. He's a wide receiver out of SMU. And, you know, one thing Mickey Loomis said is, you know, they were looking at wide receivers in the draft. It's not that they didn't want wide receivers. It's that, you know, you're on the board, you see a guy like, oh, we like that guy, when and he's about 10 picks away, doesn't get to him. And then suddenly you're changing your strategy. They didn't trade forward. They didn't trade back. First time in 13 years they haven't done that. So, you know, I think there's a wide receiver coming in. Whether, you know, there's two in this class, but I think a guy like Keenan Allen suddenly becomes, now that you did not land a wide receiver in the draft, suddenly becomes a bigger option. And one of the things, like, I understand people, there's a lot of names, like Nick Nash was still on the board at, you know, in the seventh round, but you're drafting a wide receiver in the seventh round, it's like, okay, is he going to make your roster? Because these late round picks, you really need them to be special teams contributors, and wide receiver is a position that can be difficult to project to special teams because they are not a guy, like, can they make a tackle? Maybe. You have a 6'5 wide receiver who can run down the field. Can he be a gunner? Can he be a jammer?
Right.
Maybe.
If he doesn't have the ball in his hands running it, right. How much use does he have to
and
give?
These were star, even the seventh round picks in the NFL were probably star receivers in college, didn't play special teams. So it can be tough to project, and I think that's why the Saints often don't go for these kind of interesting wide receiver names, and they bring them in as UDFA. So, like you said, Moochie Dixon out of SMU.
Can't wait to hear how he got that nickname.
Yeah. Easton Kilty, offensive lineman out of Kansas State. Then you had Torricelli Simpkins, another interior offensive lineman out of South Carolina. Marcus Yarns, running back out of Delaware. He's an interesting one.
Okay.
Yeah, highly productive runner at Delaware. You know, you don't get a lot of hype at Delaware, but, you know, it's a fun name. You know, I saw the name pop up, and I initially read it as Marcus Yams, which, you know, the R and the N kind of merged together after about 9 years in the draft room. But it's Marcus Yarns. Again, you know, 2,344 yards, 23 touchdowns on 342 carries, another 64 catches for 812 yards and 11 touchdowns. So, you know, a really intriguing skill set there.
Yeah, with Marcus Yarns, once again, the running back class this year was so loaded that you would see, you know, top 20s, and you're thinking all these guys could get drafted, yeah. Right? Marcus Yarns was one of those guys that was kind of in the back end of some top 20 lists that you would see for running back rankings. When, like you mentioned, Jeff, super, super productive. And it's kind of interesting that the Saints obviously told you with Devin Neal and now adding Marcus Yarns as UDFA as well, that they were looking for some ready-to-play kind of productive guys in college. So the running back room needed some help.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a year where I could see a UDFA running back making it. You know, that's not true every year.
I'll have to look up his measurables. I don't think he's the biggest guy, and that's probably why he went undrafted.
Yeah, he's 5'11", 193, but he had 4'4", 540. But no, I mean, like, in most years, you'd be like, it's going to be a tough nut to crack at running back. I don't know. If Kendre Miller doesn't show it, if he comes into camp and gets hurt again, I could think he'd cut him. Like, I don't think he's like, year two for a third-round pick should be guaranteed unless something crazy happens. Year three, no. Like,
agreed.
Your guaranteed money is gone. You know, this is a new coaching staff. If he doesn't hack it, he's done.
Yeah, we'll see what the attitude is with Kendre Miller because besides the injuries, we knew there was a little bit of a rift with head coach Dennis Allen at the time.
Right, so really you're in there competing with, you know, Alvin's obviously the guy.
For sure.
Then Devin Neal is a sixth-round pick who, you know, I think he's going to be a contributor, but who knows how much. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, so if you're Marcus Yarns, this is a good, like, I'm not surprised Marcus Yarns was like, okay, yeah, that's a good spot for me. I have a chance to compete for a job there. So anyway, that'll be an interesting one to watch. Linebacker, outside linebacker out of Rutgers, Tyreem Powell, 6'5", 239.
Scarlet Knight pride.
Guys, yeah, New Jersey. So there's going to be a lot of outside linebacker questions. Like, do you have enough? Do you need additional pieces? So that's an interesting one. Dallas Beanham, defensive back out of South Dakota State. Second year in a row, they've brought in a UDFA out of South Dakota State. The other one was Isaiah Stallbird, who was a safety linebacker that they kind of converted to safety. So I'm sure they know each other well. Omari Thomas, defensive tackle out of Tennessee, you know, just building up that interior line, 6'4", 325. Elliot Davison, safety out of UTSA, you know, the Fighting Marcus Davenports. They also have a tryout guy from UTSA, so they clearly were looking at the Roadrunners.
Beep, beep.
beep, beep. Jasheen Davis, edge rusher out of Wake Forest, 6'3", 270, kind of outside linebacker. Chris Tyree, running back, wide receiver out of Virginia. I'm kind of interested to see whether they bring him in as a running back or a wide receiver. He did both, and that's going to be, I would expect, wide receiver. But he was more productive as a running back in college. He's 5'10", 190, 200, his college stats, 106 catches, 1,081 yards, 7 touchdowns, then 277 rushes, 1,204 yards, 8 touchdowns in 61 games. So very much was a running back wide receiver. Not exactly a Travis Hunter, but, you know, you get the idea. Dual threat guy. And then the final one, and maybe the most intriguing one, and I kept him for the end because it's fascinating. James Burnup, punter, Alabama. This dude is 6'6", 236.
Yeah.
Jeez. If he doesn't make it as a punter, he can be a professional wrestler. Like, what the heck? He's bigger than most of their edge rushers. I mean, at least taller.
Jordan Fiegel, the morning show producer for Tommy Tucker, texted me when that happened. Roll damn punter, legit one of the best in school history. So, hey, we got one of the Tide's best punters all time.
And I wouldn't say Matthew Hayball is exactly entrenched. You know, like, he kind of went down the wire with Lou Headley. I thought he had some nice moments. He put a ton of punts inside the 20, but, you know, I think I've been asking for years for the NFL to separate punts inside the 20 and punts inside the 10, because there's a big difference between a punt to the 18 and a punt to the 8. And I feel like, you know, I think Matt Hayball led the NFL in punts inside the 20, but so many of them were like to the 15 or the 17. And it's like, I want punts to the 6. I want punts to the 5, because he didn't have that kind of field flipping leg. And the same, he had a better leg than Lou Headley, but still didn't have like the, you know, you see some of these punters come out and they're hitting rockets. And missiles. Darren Rizzi liked him, but there were points last year where I thought Darren Rizzi was gonna throw him out of the bus on the way home. Like, you go back to that game in New York, Alvin Kamara had to come up and be like, Darren, calm down. He's the punter. I didn't realize you'd go off on a punter like that. So, no, I mean, I think that's going to be a punter competition. You're going to have a kicker competition. So, for the third year in a row, the specialists are going to be fascinating to watch, because Charlie Smith's still around.
Right.
So, and he's another guy who's like big dude. And it's just going to be funny. Like, Matt Hayball's kind of slight of frame. So you're going to have a kicker who's a little tiny guy facing a kicker who's a big, big burly guy in Blake Groupie and Charlie Smith. And you're going to have a punter who's kind of a little slight of frame guy going against another punter who's a big, massive guy, both Australians. So, you know.
6'6 punter, man.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to help you with fakes, but if he has to go out there and make a tackle, I feel pretty good about it.
Shoot, you could do the tush push with him.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe he's the new Taysom Hill. But yeah, 6'6", I saw that and I was like, that can't be right. I thought it was a typo. And I had to double check it. But yeah, 6'6", 236.
Jeff, was Yarns at the Senior Bowl? I know he was a Senior Bowl invite.
I'm not sure.
He got invited to the Combine, the Senior Bowl, and East-West Shrine Bowl. So all three of the processes pre-draft. So, but
it wouldn't surprise me, because half of the Saints, the players the Saints brought in,
they love the Senior Bowl. They every single year they just adore the Senior Bowl.
But yes, he was at the Senior Bowl.
Okay, yeah, Yarns is a really interesting one for me, guys. I know I talked a little bit about him earlier, but he's kind of like, the reason he probably went undrafted is because Delaware, like, smaller school, but also not the biggest, bulkiest guy in the world at the running back position. But he's got good hands. You know, some of the strengths and weaknesses about running inside the tackles is not necessarily one of his strengths, but could be a weapon as like a third down pass catching back potentially. Yeah, that's the one that definitely jumped off the page to me. I know that they also got Neal in the sixth round, but a pair of running backs. And listen, as you mentioned, Jeff, Kendra Miller's job is nowhere near solidified entering his third year. I mean, he is one of the biggest question marks on the roster entering like all the offseason camps.
Right, that you wanted to believe that the running back position was set with a young guy still in the mix here, but we just don't know his availability.
Third round pick, right. You know, and the thing is, like, and I'm not saying like the Saints aren't high on Devin Neal. I'm sure they are. But the difference between a sixth round pick and a UDFA is not that crazy. Like, you'll see sixth round picks not make the roster.
Sure.
Now, you'd like them to make the roster, but they're not a lock to make a roster. So if Yarns comes out and is the better player in camp, he could displace that guy. As a team, you always want, there's always going to be an inclination to be like, we were right in the draft. We don't want to immediately come out and say like, well, we made the wrong pick. But a guy like Rick Nelson comes to mind, you know, fourth round pick out of Florida State, didn't even make the roster. So it's like, you got to earn it. If you're at day three, picks have to earn it. It's not guaranteed.
Yeah, I would even say, you know, your earlier round picks, even second, third round, You'd have to do something pretty dramatic, though, to get cut, but nothing set in stone.
I don't think it's –
You'd still want to keep him around to try and
develop.
There's
like a 0.3% chance. I can't even think off the top of my head of a day two or one pick not making the roster. It's almost unheard of.
What was the year that the Saints ended up cutting Pittman and kept around Pierre Thomas? Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was his second year, I think.
Okay. But right, he didn't last long.
Yeah.
If you use a top 100 pick in the draft on a player, you do not want to, like, it had to be some kind of extraordinary circumstance.
Yeah, you'd imagine
maybe legal,
attitude or
legal
right,
issues
something
or
something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't be any kind of, oh, he stinks on the field. We just completely miscouted this guy. You're like, oh, well, you liked him for some reason.
Yeah.
So you're not going to just give up on him.
It
right
was 07. He was Antonio Pittman was a fourth round pick at Ohio State.
Fourth round. Okay. So yeah. It wasn't even that high.
I mean, but fourth-round picks, like, it happened. Like, there have been times that fourth-round picks don't make the roster, Rick
sure.
Nelson.
I thought he was a third, at least, but that was my fault.
Yeah.
Looking at the we've been talking about the UDFAs, undrafted free agents, for the Saints. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some of the Kellen Moore audio talking about our picks. I see that finger up. What you got, Jeff?
It wasn't Rick Nelson. It was it's going to bug. Oh, Rick Leonard. Rick Leonard.
Right.
I kept saying
the
Rick
offensive
Nelson.
Lineman from Florida State.
And what kind of draft? What round was he?
He was a fourth rounder. So like, I'm remembering the right guy. I just called him Nelson instead of Leonard.
I didn't remember his name. I remembered like the player.
Yeah, Florida State.
Rick
I got
something.
That right.
We're doing our WWL Draft Fest Sunday recap show. Now dipping into the day two selections. In round two, we had the quarterback out of Louisville, Tyler Shuck. Texas defensive lineman, Vernon Broughton. And also Virginia safety, Jonas Sanker. And Coach Kellen Moore recapped his day two picks.
Starting with Tyler Shuck, obviously, we're really, really excited about the opportunity to get Tyler. 32 starts. He faced a lot of adversity through his career. Battled through, obviously, multiple unfortunate injuries that kind of took him through a navigating process. But, as we went through this process, just the more touching points we had with Tyler, the more impressed we got. He was a guy who went through this whole process. I think it's unique when you have a guy who went through the Senior Bowl, did the whole entire combine, went through the visits. Scott went out there and saw him at Louisville. We had a 30 visit with him. Every interaction just really enforced the player that he was. And so as you go through this QB process, obviously never easy decisions with that. Just felt like he was a really good quarterback. He was ready. He's prepared. Obviously he's been through a lot in a good way. And so he's ready to compete in our quarterback room as it plays itself out. Going to Vernon, obviously just a phenomenal kid. Just the energy, the juice that he brings. Our chance to go out there for their pro day, we had a chance to kind of connect with a lot of those Texas guys, and obviously this is our second one that we got. So, he played behind a lot of premier defensive linemen when he was there, and so as a result, he kind of had to be patient. And sometimes you credit these guys that play the patient game, that kind of earn their opportunities on the field. And for him, obviously, it took a little while just as he waited his turn. But Bo and Terry had great relationships with him. Obviously, when you have people in-house who've invested with these guys, who spent a lot of time with them, huge advantage for us. His versatility on the defensive line, his ability to play in a number of positions, I think is going to be great for us. He's got length. He's got quickness. He can anchor. He's got good hands. He'll have a chance definitely to compete with our interior defensive line group. And then Jonas Sanker. This guy's a three-year starter at Virginia, special teams. He's a captain. He just does everything. And this guy is, for us, we just felt really, really fortunate to be sitting there late in that draft. There's a lot of DBs that were going off the board. And for him to still be there and available to us, we're talking about him for a while. And so just really impressed by this guy. His play style, his instincts, his ability to, his tackling ability is really, really impressive. His ability to play on the back end. We're really fired up to have this guy. He'll obviously provide tremendous depth and add competition to the safety position there. So excited about all three. That was a big time day for us. We were really excited about it.
Kellen Moore recapping day two's picks there.
Yeah, one guy we haven't talked about a lot is Jonas Sanker, and I think it's easy to overlook him because he was the final pick on a day where you took a quarterback and everyone's going to be talking about the quarterback, right?
Yeah, no matter. Even I felt bad we kind of let off talking about Tyler Shuck when he was a second-round pick. It wasn't the first-round pick.
What happens when you draft a quarterback.
Exactly. That QB gets all the attention.
What happens when you draft a quarterback. But, Jonas Sanker is intriguing. I think people are going to really like Jonas when they get to know him, and he's a good example of – I go into the draft, I try not to have immediate, visceral reactions to any of the picks because, I don't watch a lot of Virginia football. I don't know what I don't know about Jonas Sanker. But then you look at him and you see some of the hits he puts down. And he's a bigger dude. He's strong. again, he came up playing eight-man football. We asked him, you know, were you recruited? Like, how did you end up at Virginia? And he said, like, there was a few plays in college or in high school that, like, they were such big hits and such big highlights that, like, recruits or scouts started being like, oh, look at this guy. Like, eight-man football? Like, how much time do you think scouts spend looking at eight-man football? Arena football without the arena. But there was one hit in high school. Like, we were like, what are some of your biggest hits? And he immediately was like, oh, that was one of my junior year. It was a running back going to the edge. And I just took him out of his cleats, sent him back 4 yards. I found the clip. I tweeted the clip if you want to take a look
at it.
But, no, I mean, I think in a Brandon Staley scheme, he wants to go too deep. He told us that. And I think that's significant. Like, you want too deep at basically every position. And, you know, in Brandon Staley's defense, you have this role called a star. You only have a nickel. Like, it's going to be this kind of terminology issue we're going to have over the next few months.
A little bit of a shift, right?
Trying to talk about Brandon Staley's defense and saying, yeah, he's the nickel corner. Well, they don't have a nickel.
Everyone's
the star, which it's similar, but there are different responsibilities. You play a little more like a linebacker than a corner. And I think he fits perfectly into that. Now, is he going to play that as a rookie? Probably not. I think you're going to try to get Alonte Taylor in that role. And as he told you, I think he expects to be in that role.
Right.
That kind of Jalen Ramsey role with the Rams or that Derwin James role with the Chargers. And I asked Kellen about that, if he saw him as that type of player. And he said, yeah. I mean, maybe not significantly as a rookie. He's probably going to be a core special teamer. But I think he has that skill set where you can play him a little closer to the line of scrimmage and have him be that rover who can cover, who can hit, who can take on a tight end, who isn't afraid to put his nose in. This is a guy who, as a safety, had more than 200 tackles total over the last 2 years. This is a safety. This is college. You don't play that many games. It's a safety. Anyway, I like Jones. I think people are going to really appreciate his game the way they like, similar to how they like C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Like,
yeah.
I think his skill set is similar to that.
Go ahead,
I was going to say, I definitely expect him to be an early, at least standout coming, contributing on special teams.
Correct.
Would see like an initial huge role for him.
Yeah. And CJ was also, he was a fourth round pick.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's what we talked about yesterday. And Steve, you put it perfectly that, you know, special teamers right off the bat, you're not asking the guy to come in and play a safety role immediately necessarily because you have Tyrann Mathieu and you signed Justin Reed to the big contract, right? Where he ends up fitting into Brandon Staley's scheme is going to be an interesting spot for him, but also that he doesn't have to play immediately. In that spot.
Got that time to develop.
Kind of learn, develop. You're not forcing them into the role. I know it's a third round pick and everyone wants to see, you know, those top 100 selections get on the field ASAP, but he is going to get on the field ASAP as a special teamer.
Also, and keep in mind, you got to cover kickoffs a lot more now.
Right.
You need guys to do
he's
that.
Going to work his way into the Saints defense.
I'd be remiss if I didn't at least mention Derek Carr during this show.
Yes.
We talked about his second round pick for the Saints.
Derek Carr.
Being Tyler Shuck.
That name sounds so familiar.
Yeah,
Oh, this is the car review guy.
You know, the car review guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the YouTube guy.
He's a big fan of Rolls Royce.
Yeah, that's right. He's the YouTube guy. That's right.
$500,000, half a
million
on a car.
Gotcha.
For the everyday man.
My bad. It's just been so long.
The former Raider.
Oh, yeah. He was hanging out with a former 49er. That's right. The former Raider and the former 49er.
What personality with
those
brothers?
They were in the car together. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah,
how could I forget?
You got it. That's my bad.
Famous YouTuber.
Well, our new head coach in Kellen Moore, he was asked, does the Shuck pick say anything about Derek Carr's future with the Saints?
We just felt like, you know, it was a really good player. Obviously, we felt good about Tyler through this process. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with ever investing in the quarterback room. We feel like there's a lot of depth in there now as we go through this process, and we'll just let it play out.
You know, it's sad. We're yucking it up over here. The situation with Derek Carr is really an unfortunate one that the organization has to deal with, but I know fans have been peeved at the quarterback. They've never really totally embraced him in his role. Coming to New Orleans, it was always looked at another cast off from the Raiders. We got Dennis Allen, and now they picked up Derek Carr. And now it appears like he's kind of put his nose up to New Orleans and the Who Dat Nation. And a lot of fans, Deuce kind of asked me yesterday at our Rouse's, you know, draft coverage, if he thinks there's any way that Carr can get back into the good graces of the Who Dat Nation. I don't think so. And the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert, though, feels winning solves everything. And I just don't think that's even the case with Carr.
Yeah, you know, I think the Saints are being very strategic in how they're choosing to not talk about this.
Just avoid it.
And Derek Carr also hasn't talked about it as well. I think they're just trying to keep their options open, right? I don't think they're trying to alienate anyone any more than they have to be. I think they're trying to figure out if he's going to have surgery or not. And once that decision is made, then you can go from there. David Carr, the former 49er who, you know, we were joking about, he did say that, you know, they're still making that decision. He thinks the injury occurred the same time he broke his hand against the Giants.
And I know you guys feel this too, but it's like, what's the wait? What are we waiting on here with the surgery that, you know, oh, I'm going to have it, so he's going to miss the entire year? Why isn't this done already?
He doesn't want to have surgery. He wants to rehab without surgery. Well, I mean, that's the idea. And so I think you're trying to figure that out. And once you figure that out, then you can make comments and decisions. And I think Tyler Shuck's going to be your starting quarterback week one of the 2025 season.
Hey-o!
But they're not going to alienate this situation any more than they need to. And that's why you see guys playing coy.
It's just ugly.
Jeff coming off the top ropes with that selection.
I mean, I don't think is that a bold take?
No, Bobby said the same thing.
I mean,
when it happened,
you have the guy you took at 40 competing with the guy who was your fifth round pick last year on a different coaching staff. And like, I mean, Rattler's going to compete.
Right.
I think when people see Shuck out there, they're going to be like, okay, he's the starter.
Just hearing Kellen gush about him, yeah, it's his guy. And you picked him 40th overall. I think I agree with you, Jeff. Especially, I know Loomis made the comments, if Carr's healthy, is the starting quarterback.
Yeah, if.
Yeah, it's a big if. It's going to be
if tough. I had Jessica Alba's phone number.
Exactly. it's almost certainly going to be.
I can send that to you.
Oh, thanks.
And we are back. One more segment on this NFL Draft Recap edition of Inside Black and Gold, brought to you by WWL Radio. I'm Jeff Nowak and Steve Geller, Charlie Long. This final segment, we break down who are some of our other favorite draft classes. Who do we think stole some players? Who do we think kind of fell flat a little bit? All that good stuff. Here you go.
Nine selections we've been going through, and also it is official now. The Saints have put out their undrafted free agent class, which we had talked about earlier.
Names,
there are no new additions to that list they put out, right, Jeff?
11 so we went names. Yeah. We went through earlier in the show. Those are all there, yep.
So we'll get in more of this hour into kind of thoughts around the NFL since we've been talking about the Saints the first 2 hours. And just curious from what you guys saw and think right off the bat, did any people or teams, I guess you'd say, stand out in this draft as really hitting that home run for their squads?
Well, anytime you can get a first-round talent at number 59, you win the draft, in my opinion. And so, like, and the Ravens, you know, this is what I said in the first hour. Like, how do good teams stay good?
Right.
They do the vetting on a player that's falling in the draft, feel good about it, and land a guy like Mike Green. I mean, he's a first-round pick. No question. And I think a lot of times what happens with players like that is, yes, there are some legitimate off-the-field concerns, but, you know, not necessarily, okay, we can't draft this guy. We don't feel comfortable drafting this guy because there are question marks. And when you're drafting a player, you know, the way you describe it, you know, however you describe it, you're basically marrying that player. You don't marry someone that you're not sure about. You marry someone that you're in love with. Or maybe you marry someone for a green card, but that doesn't fit into the analogy. Anyway, so a lot of teams may have had concerns about it, so he fell and he fell and he fell and he fell. But the Ravens were a team that did all the vetting. They turned over all the rocks. They talked to the people they needed to talk to and they felt good about it. And so they get the, you know, NCAA leader in sacks and a guy that, you know, showed up at the Senior Bowl, blew up two first-round offensive tackles, and then said, I'm good. I'm leaving on a high note like George Costanza. And so the Ravens, a team that traditionally is this elite defensive group, ends up with Mike Green. And I think the rest of their draft class was solid as well. So that would be mine. Like, that's the steal of the draft. In 2-3 years, we're going to be looking back and saying, how the heck did Mike Green get to the second round? And it'll be because, you know, it wasn't until the Ravens that team felt comfortable with it.
Right.
Guys, I'm going to go with a couple for ones that I like, and then I think this will kind of lead into the talk about Shadur.
Right.
The Browns draft was weird.
Well, but Mel Kiper Jr. gave him an A+.
Of course he did.
Weird? In what In what way? How could you possibly?
The Browns?
You draft two quarterbacks. You draft two running backs. Like, you don't address much else.
You trade
off
Adam
of Travis
two.
Hunter.
Yeah. You trade to not take a generational player.
Yeah, and you get. Yeah, it was a very strange draft.
A+, baby.
For them. But I want to actually address a couple. Unfortunately, and I guess it also kind of depends on what you think of Tet McMillan, the Panthers kind of killed it in this draft. Dan Morgan, I think, did a really, really good job. And Tet was...
They were very active.
Yeah, Tet was the first, I think, big surprise in the top 10. Like, all those players, you kind of expected... It was a gigantic smokescreen because it caught everybody that they were going to take Jalen Walker or take a defensive lineman in the first round. Instead, they take Tet and get Bryce, the big body target with pick number 8 overall. But then they go defensive line back-to-back picks with Nick Scorton and then Prince Liam Onmielen, two SEC edge rushers.
I did like Etienne as well.
Etienne in the 4th round, as you were mentioning. Lathan Ransom, the safety from Ohio State, in the 4th round as well. So 2 4th round picks, 2 5th round picks. Cam Jackson, defensive tackle from Florida. And Mitchell Evans, the tight end from Notre Dame. And then 6th round, Jimmy Horn. I think that is a very good draft class, unfortunately, in the NFC South. Another one that I really liked, and this is just kind of personal, I loved at least the start of the Lions draft, getting Tyleek Williams in the 1st round, who is just a brick wall. And then in the 2nd round, doubling down on just the beef and getting Tate Ratledge, the interior offensive lineman from Georgia, Isaac Tesla in the 3rd round. Miles Frazier, who I thought could have been a 4th round pick or maybe even a 3rd round pick. I think it was like number 86 on Mike D's big board. Falls into day 3 and then falls all the way into the 5th round. I think they potentially got a starting guard in the 5th round. That's really good as well. But just talking about like the Dan Campbell mentality of winning up front, and you get 3 quality linemen and a potential high upside swing with Isaac Tesla, the wide receiver in the 3rd round.
I'll give you one more. I thought the Seahawks had a sneaky good draft. And, you know, not a lot of people are talking about it because they didn't have, you know, they went with a guard in the 1st round, Greer's Abel, but I think he's the best interior lineman, can kick out to tackle. And then they probably got the best athlete in the draft, Nick Amonwori. He probably should have been a 1st round pick. Positional value, right? Some question marks. Best athlete in the draft, no question. They got him in the 2nd round. And Elijah Arroyo.
That was when I had on my Saints wish
list. Out of Miami. Right. So, you know, like fantastic, fantastic tight end out of Miami. And then Jalen Milroe, you know, like a guy that I think in Clint Kubiak's offense can be really good. You know, and then it's just a lot of really, really intriguing options. Torrey Horton out of Colorado State, I think, is a sneaky good pick. And so, I mean, the Seahawks, a team that has their quarterback, has like a developmental quarterback, builds a really, really good team, I think.
Curious to see, you know, how Clint Kubiak now fares over with the Seahawks after just 1 year here in New Orleans.
Yeah, it'll be funny if his offense finally clicks. I don't know. This might be his last shot. If he flames out there, it's going to be tough. What you'll say is this is his first chance to be an offensive coordinator on a staff that is not, you know, kind of marked for slaughter. You know, like he was the offensive coordinator on Mike Zimmer's staff, and it was like, yeah, okay, well, we'll give you this very short leash, and then if not, send you into the sun. Same thing happened. So
one last thing before we get into the Browns. I liked the Cardinals' first 3 picks. Yeah. I don't know too much about their day 3 selections. Walter Nolan in the 1st round. I mean, listen, if that kid hits, he's going to be a terror on the interior defensive line for years to come. He needs to be in the kind of right frame of mind, is kind of what Mike and I were talking about with him. But he's got all the talent in the world to be a legit NFL stud for a long time. The 2nd round, you get one of the best value picks in the entire draft. If he's healthy, Will Johnson at pick 47.
Yep.
I mean, unbelievable that he fell out of the 1st round, and he fell into the middle of the 2nd round. The Cardinals, you could have told me that entering the draft, Will Johnson was their 1st round pick. I would have believed you. They got him in the 2nd round and got Walter Nolan, and then they got Jordan Burch, an edge rusher that we talked with Pete Jenkins about. Pete worked with them. He's a South Carolina guy. They got him in the 3rd round. I love those first three picks for the Cardinals for their defense. I think they definitely bolstered that. And now let's dive into...
Wait. One more. Can I give you one more?
Okay, go ahead.
Like, super value draft, the Giants.
The Giants did what they were supposed to, it felt
like. I mean,
with Abdul Carter.
Yeah, so Abdul Carter, that's the right pick. I think they were trying to get a trade, but that's the right pick. I think he's the best. You know, you can say him or Travis Hunter. You know, some people had Abdul at the top. Some people had Travis Hunter at the top. You know, elite edge rusher.
Yeah.
Then they still get their quarterback in Jackson Dart. They trade in. They don't give up a ton.
Yeah, third round picks.
Darius Alexander out of Toledo. I could take or leave that.
He's an NFL ready defensive tackle. He's an older prospect. I think he's like 25, 26.
Oh, so old.
he's a guy that like, and I think he was at the Senior Bowl, huh, Jeff? Darius Alexander?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was one of those guys that really made a lot of money in the pre-draft process that, you know, someone kind of from a smaller school but just went and terrorized offensive linemen at the pre-draft process events. Yeah, I got there. I like that pick too.
But then Cam Scadaboo, fourth round.
Sadly love that pick for the Giants.
Yeah, and they needed a running back. They got a running back. And then Marcus Embo, who I think was one of the top interior linemen.
It's Bo.
Embo, yeah, right. You know, so, I mean, like, you got, like, I don't know, that's what, five starters? That's a pretty good haul.
Nice pieces,
yeah.
Right.
No, it's a good draft for Joe Shane.
I'll throw one in, too, for me. I like the New England Patriots. I thought they did a lot around to help Drake May beef up that offense for them. Will Campbell, LSU guy, their fourth overall pick. Trayvon Henderson, the running back out of Ohio State in the second round, and their two third-round picks. Wide receiver Kyle Williams from Washington State, and then the Georgia center, Jared Wilson there. Like, the focus to surround Drake May to have success as much as possible, because what we saw from him, he definitely looks like a star rising.
And Trevion Henderson, as much of a home run play waiting to happen as he is when he has the ball in his hands, he's one of the better pass-protecting running backs in this class.
Yeah.
He's an instant three-down back and someone that, you know, if you try to blitz Drake May, he's going to take your head off. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think the Patriots had a good draft.
Jeff, looking at your question, I know it was about the second round and quarterbacks where the Saints ended up taking theirs and Louisville's Tyler Shuck. The only time they've taken a quarterback in team history in round two.
Yeah, so, you know, I did want to go through, like, the whole list of second round picks. We have time for that?
Yeah, we could do this.
All right, so give me thumbs up, thumbs down. So, Tyler Shuck, pick 40. None in 2024. In 2023, Will Levis, which...
Thumbs down.
Yeah, I mean, still got time. You're talking about year three.
We should have known when to put in mayonnaise and coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, eating bananas with the peel on, stuff like that. You know. 2021, Kyle Trask.
Thumbs down.
Yeah. He was a 64th pick, so pretty late in the second round. Jalen Hurts of the Eagles.
Thumbs up.
Yeah,
he's been to two Super Bowls, got a ring already, right.
I think he's pretty good. Drew Locke to Broncos in 2019.
Boo. Thumbs down.
2018, there were none. DeSean Kizer to the Browns in 2017.
That's the Browns, so thumbs down.
Christian Hackenberg to the Jets in 2016.
Boy. Oh, my goodness. Thumbs
terrible.
Down.
Now, this is an interesting one. 2014, Derek Carr to the Raiders. The funny thing, it's like people are going to want to say thumbs down.
The famous YouTuber?
The famous YouTuber, Derek Carr.
Homegrown network.
The homegrown network. People are going to want to say Derek Carr, but like we're talking about a second-round pick. Derek Carr's career is a highly successful second-round pick, so... You know,
I plead the fifth.
Yeah, I mean, like we don't like Derek Carr right now, but like if you're talking about total career second round pick, when you think of like, oh, Christian Hackenberg, DeSean Kizer, okay, yeah. Thumbs up. Jimmy Garoppolo is an interesting one because second round pick, he was a 62nd pick, went to the Patriots. Yeah. He started a couple games in the year that Tom Brady got suspended. Patriots ended up trading him to the 49ers. Ended up going to the Raiders. You know, so a couple Raiders quarterbacks there. He was kind of right in the middle.
Right.
Brock Osweiler in 2012.
Thumbs down. Man.
And then a couple others. Really interesting in 2011. Andy Dalton at 35.
Thumbs up.
I got to give a thumbs up for Andy Mann.
Absolutely. Oh, you're going to give Andy a thumbs up? You're not going to give Derek a thumbs up? They had the exact same career. Anyway, Colin Kaepernick to the 49ers in 36. He went to the Super Bowl. Yeah, right there. I think he's in the middle. And here's the thing, like, because we're comparing him to Jimmy Clausen in 2010, the guy Mel Kiper said he was going to retire if he wasn't any good.
You're making me feel bad now, Jeff, with this history of second-round quarterbacks.
Well, that's what I mean. It's hit or miss. It's hit or miss. That's my point.
There's been a lot of misses.
Right.
Well, right, but it's hit or miss. It's probably 50-50.
Where's the good 50? Let's come on.
What are you talking about?
Like
I know Jalen Hurts so far is the only one I've really liked.
Jalen Hurts. Derek Carr's career, he's played 10 years. He's 20th all-time in passing yards.
We're like 3.5.
Andy Dalton,
so
again. So you're talking about, and I'm not saying, there's better ones.
I know, okay. I've been waiting for the big one.
2008, Brian Brohm and Chad Henne. No. 2007. Kevin Cobb, John Beck, Drew Stanton.
Dear
no.
Lord.
2006, Kellen Clemens and Tavares Jackson.
You're not making me feel good here, no way.
Now you went 4 years without a single one. 2005, 2004, 2003, 2002, zero. 2001, Drew Brees.
There you go.
The light and the shine that shines down from the heavens.
The caveat with Drew Brees is that he was the 31st overall pick. If it happened today, he would have been a first round pick. Yeah. Then Quincy Carter to the Cowboys. Marcus Tuiasosopo. So, I mean, like.
Good pronunciation, sir.
Thank you. He went to the Raiders. So I mean, that's the thing. That's why taking a quarterback in the second round is it's a sketchy proposition. But you know, there are some long-term quality quarterbacks on that list. There are some guys you're like, wow, I forgot about them. There are some guys that started games. Jimmy Garoppolo weren't great. There were some guys who got decent contracts. So, I mean, that's where you are. You're talking about a kind of a 50-50 proposition.
We're going to take a break here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed one.
Okay, go ahead.
Geno Smith.
Okay.
Geno's all right. I'll give him a thumbs up
like
on that one.
That's like the sixth good name in the last 20 years.
Ended on
there's
note,
like 20 names on here. 10 of them probably had long-term careers.
Back here as we get to wrap up our Draft Fest Sunday recap show. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, Jeff Nowak, also Cullen Steele, keeping us all in line behind the board right now. Guys, the NFL draft over. We survived, and the Saints come out of it with 9 selections, plus their UDFA undrafted free agent classes also set. And look forward to now rookie minicamp. We'll get to, at least to talk more to these guys and see how things went in. You know, it's a whole new regime, and it's like you feel this overwhelming breath of fresh air, I guess you could say, between the coaches and a ton of new players.
Yeah. I hope that as we get forward in this process, the excitement is going to outweigh complaining about everything, because I'm so tired of complaining about everything, man. I want to be excited about a young quarterback, and I don't care if he's 25. He's a fresh NFL quarterback.
Old.
It's a new era. It's a new head coach. It's a whole new group of players, man. He brought in 9 players for a reason. You can call him Unk if you want. I'm okay with that. Unk Shunk. Anyway, I'm excited about it. And like, yeah, this season might not be great, but I think you're building towards something. And that's where I see this draft class. Like, you added a ton of young players. Like, these are players who should be a core of your group, leaders of your team in 5-6 years, right? So I'm excited about it. And I'm looking forward to rookie minicamp, looking forward to seeing these guys out there, looking forward to what this team looks like.
9 picks, 9 positions as well. I think that's pretty interesting considering what we were just talking about with the Browns taking 2 quarterbacks and 2 running backs. You get offensive tackle, quarterback, defensive tackle, safety, linebacker, cornerback, running back, tight end, defensive end.
Yeah, there was a run there. It was like, what was it, 4 or 5 straight defensive picks?
4 straight defensive picks. But that's kind of my point, is that you addressed all these different holes. Now, the one thing that they didn't really address, and Mickey talked about it last night, wide receiver.
Yep.
Exactly. But the way, I guess, the board fell, like they were never really in position to get a receiver. The other thing is, what did this receiver room need? It needed the big body guy. This draft didn't have many of them. Like, it was Tet McMillan, who went number 8 right before the Saints picked at 9. And then
Jaden Higgins
from Iowa State, who went with the second pick of the second round. He went 34th overall, basically 6 picks before you. And if you were committed to drafting Tyler Shuck with your second round pick, he wasn't really in the conversation anyway. So, yes, they still needed a big body receiver, but you weren't really finding that in this draft class. It was a lot more of slot, kind of speedy guys than, you know, the traditional big X.
Yeah, I think is that Keenan Allen's music I hear? I think I hear Keenan Allen's music. That's weird.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're like, if you're the Bucks, you can just keep running out all these slot guys and just have them tear up every opposing defense they go up against. Emeka Buka is going to be so good, man. I'm not looking forward to that at all.
Wait, what are you talking about? I'm talking about Keenan Allen, the receiver that's a free agent that I think the Saints are going to sign. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about the style of player.
No.
I was thinking, you know, along your lines, Jeff, I went to start looking at those free agent wide receivers. Also a guy like Amari Cooper out there as well. But I'm curious to see. I do think they're going to have to go that route with the veteran free agent because of, you know, you didn't get the young guy in this draft, and that bigger type body you do need, I feel, in this offense.
Yeah, and you're in that range. You're not going to ruin a comp pick. A 1-year deal is not going to kill you. And I think you do need one kind of veteran option that is beyond Cedric Wilson, Brandon Cooks. But we'll see. All right, that's going to do it for this long WWO Radio Field edition of Inside Black and Gold. It's going to wrap it up for myself, Jeff Nowak, Steve Geller, along with Charlie Long. Cullen Steele also produced the episode. Got to give him some props. Did a great job. Thanks to Charlie Long for coming on. Always appreciate having him on the show, and I appreciate you for listening. It's going to be a lot to talk about, a 9-man draft class. We're only scratching the surface in terms of, it's only been 24 hours. Haven't been able to go through all the tape I want to go through, break down some of the, especially the later round prospects who haven't watched nearly as much of, but it's going to be fun. We're also going to have a rookie minicamp coming up in May, so there will be some opportunities to chat with some of these players, learn a little bit more about each of them, and you know, get excited. I think getting excited for this upcoming season is the correct approach. If you want to be frustrated about Mickey Loomis, the decision-making, all that, I get it. But to me, this is a new head coaching era. Got a new quarterback, got a lot of new players, and I'm looking forward to watching them get out there. So, who dat, go Saints. As always, thanks everyone for listening. If you haven't subscribed yet, please remember to do that. Check us out on YouTube at WWL Sports if you're not watching there already. And until the next time, who dat, go Saints. Easy, y'all. A peace.